Thank you. I am a conservative person. I have almost no slide, only two, so I'll be speak, not even read. So at first, I would like to modify statement of Stanisław Krajewski that I claim that logic should dominate religion. In fact, my position is weaker. I think that every cognitive discourse should be controlled by logic. Of course, this is a very vague question and delicate question. What is cognitive discourse and what is not, particularly in the case of religion? So it depends on several factors, also subjective. For example, in my case, I think that debates about proofs of the existence of God in Christianity particularly are cognitive, but for example, debates about Trinity or incarnation are not. But of course, this is a question to be discussed, because even at this conference, we had several papers about the logic of Trinity, of relation between logic and incarnation. So, but of course, in every case, one who takes this or that standpoint in this question should explain why it is cognitive or why it is not. I will give an example later. Now to go to the topic. I will speak about God sentences, and first question is, of course, what are God sentences? The simplest and grammatical or syntactic approach is that God sentences are sentences in which the term God or some other contextually or explicitly equivalents occur. But it is, you know, sometimes it is favored by atheists, for reason which is rather obvious, but this approach is rather not productive, because there are several problems in difficulties. For example, the word God is monosyllabic. Yes, it is God's sentence or not. So I prefer another approach, which I called semantico-pragmatic or pragmatico-semantic, that God's sentences are sentences which intend to assert something about God. The word intended is very important, and I will show why. So one peep say that they assert something about God as an existing being. For example, God has such and such properties. Other deny such sentences, or God exists, the position of a theist. God doesn't exist is a position of atheism. There are several other possibilities. No, anyway, this is a problem, how to find a language which is, so to speak, neutral, so can be used by those people who are religious, assert, for example, that God exists, and their opponents. The main problem, not main, but one of the main problems is that, as we know, at least in the framework of classical logic, proper names must refer to something. And now if an atheist says that God doesn't exist, sometimes he or she is accused that this is a contradictory standpoint, because use logic which assumes existence of references of proper names and assert that this reference doesn't exist. It is some paradox which should be resolved in a way. So question to be discussed, not all in this is my talk, are first of all, is logical form of God sentences. Second, how to justify God's sentences or their negations. Then the role of God's sentences in philosophical debates, particularly between theists and atheists. For example, who is obliged to prove or justify? A proponent of a positive thesis or opponent? Yes. Then no, and once again, if you use classical first order logic, there's a question of the reference of the proper name God, because it's rather undisputable that this term is a proper name. So there's a question, of course, historical, to which idea of God we should appeal. Because there are several religions, several concepts of God. So in order to simplify, I will refer to Jewish Christian traditions. So roughly and philosophically speaking, God is transcendental with respect to the world, but according to sources, it occasionally appears in the empirical reality. And if we take this rough idea of God's sentences related to Christian of Jewish religion, so we have several possibilities to illustrate God's sentences. So you have some first category is sacred texts. So you have three examples. Two are from the Bible, the third is from St. John's Gospel. Of course, they are very well known, so I will not read. Now we have another exam. This is Catholic Credo, which is, you know, important in teaching of Catholic religion. For instance, every child who is educated in Catholic religions should know this credo. This is the first category. I will return to this category a little bit later. Then we have several God sentences made by theologians. There are usually repetitions of sacred text or interpretations, and they compare various statements from sacred sources, sometimes historical, sometimes grammatical, and so on. And finally, we have third category. I don't say that is exhaustive. I omit ordinary parlance because it is not easy to analyze. It is possible, but it will be very long. So God exists, God doesn't exist, God is omniscient, God is benevolent, God is omnipotent, God is infinite, God is knowable by such and such methods, God is consistent, God is inconsistent, etc. So these sentences use not only theological terms, but also philosophical. Now to return to this text, sacred text. Of course, we have several fragments which belong or could be interpreted as belonging to various categories. For example, this famous first example, second exam, sorry, I am who I am. So some Christian philosophers, Thomists, for example, so-called existential Thomists, say that this is an expression of the philosophical idea that God's essence equal to its existence. I am not sure it is so or not. However, it is an interpretation which I know from, for example, Polish Thomistic texts, other that God created. It is not only theological, but also used in some philosophical debates, and so on. This is a question whether all examples which I gave are suitable for a logical analysis. Now, this is also a very delicate problem. I can say something from my point of view, so practically I repeat what I said at the beginning of this talk, that in my opinion, at least, some are too figurative in order to be exactly analyzed. My point is that I can understand, of course, because I know Polish language or any other language which I can use, what words mean, even in Credo. I was taught in this tradition. However, I cannot explain, maybe someone is able to do that, in non-figurative text. So it is a metaphoric residuum which is, in my opinion, not eliminated. And it prevents exact logical analysis or even logical analysis, because in order to apply logic to any discourse, we must define predicates in a or explain proper names, no, in a strict way, because it's a question of references. So I cannot say, I understand what does it mean that is one God in three persons. However, I cannot translate this statement into even ordinary parlance without metaphoric expression. So I don't share the position of the Vienna Circle that these sentences are completely meaningless. However, the meaning is to be explained. So now, coming to logic, we have two principal kinds of God sentences used in theological and or philosophical debates, namely existential statements, God exists, denials, negation of this statement, God doesn't exist, and various predicative or attributive sentence which I quoted about God is consistent, inconsistent, and so on. However, as far as the issue concerns this existential statement, there is a problem, because this pattern, God exists or its negation, is not a genuine first order sentence. So we must translate in a way into language of first order logic. Of course, it can be done by defining existence as a predicate. Yes. However, it is a controversial issue, because there are several possible solutions. Or we also can extend logic or change logic, not extend by definition of this predicate, or change logic to free logic. I mean logic without existential commitments, or Leśniewski's ontology, or other system which tolerate empty individual constant. However, I prefer rather the most simple solution, that is, in this case, a translation into first order idiom. So it can be done in this way, that there is X such that X is God. So is God is a predicate, and the problem concerns not the empty proper name, but it is a legitimate, of course, question in first order logic whether this predicate is empty or not empty, refers to one object, like in Christianity and Judaism, or refers, like in Greek mythology, to many objects. So it is a question, of course, but it is only a part of a job, because the problem is how to prove this, this sentence. How to prove this is a question. So proof can be direct, using A is P, so that exists, that X is P, but it is a circular way, so all known proofs of God's existence, except arguments by mystics or arguments taken from sacred text, are maybe not indirect, because it means in logic something different, but based on some inference. So we simply define God by properties and say that being with such and such property is exists. Well, that proves are ontological. We heard about this, listened at this conference was papers about ontological proofs, which go just from the analysis of predications, or cosmological proofs based on some empirical assumptions. So it is not a problem which I would like to discuss, because there are several papers in this tradition. So first we have this form, there is X, that X is, for example, perfect, and X is God, and then we come to show how existence follows from perfection, for example, or follows from existence of God follows from cosmological premises, for example. Now, the position of, what is important, the position of theist and atheist is exactly symmetrical in this case. This is an advantage, because it's a common language, they can debate. For example, the onus probandi, so-called onus probandi, of course, belongs to a person who a philosopher or a theologian who proposes a positive thesis. So the strategy of atheism is, of course, different. He or she can criticize proofs or offer proofs of not existence, but this is a tricky question. I will return to this problem later. So how to define P? I mean, for me, for simplicity, I take perfect as a general predicate which covers almost all predication made by philosophers or theologians about God. Now, theologians say that classical Thomists, that we have two ways. Namely, first is by maximization. It was in Latin term. A moment. Second is by so-called negatio, infinitatio and negatio. So in one case we maximize human perfections, yes. Some people something now, but God is. Omniscience, some people can do something, God can do everything, is omnipotent. Second is by negatio, it is negating human imperfection. We are mortal, God is immortal. We are finite, God is infinite. Now there is a problem with Gödel's proof, because at least in this formalization given by Kordula Świętoszewska, he didn't accept, or this formalization doesn't accept negative properties. So how to translate negative properties, I mean immortality, into a positive property? This is not so easy, but this is not my question. This attributive God sentences or predication about God are fundamental in this sense that they serve to proofs of God's existence. So we must explain by a way, I mean by definition, by axiomatization, which is a theoretical way, but not excluded in principle, how to define P in order to derive from this definition and perhaps other statements the thesis that there is X, that X is God, and then translate it to this traditional idiom that ought God exists. Now I would like to propose still another strategy which is related to this term that God's sentences are intended to assert something. Not that they assert, because this is dangerous for many reasons. They intended to assert. So there is no reason to assume that God is inconsistent by assumption. Some proponents of atheism take this strategy. So this is a hypothesis that predications about God are consistent. Of course, these predications can be cancelled then, or changed, or even rejected, this however. But if we say that this sentence, God is P, is consistent, it has a model, by model theory. God is a proper name, which by definition has a reference, but reference in the model. So it doesn't mean that we obtain in this way any proof of God's existence, because people who claim that they proved that God exists, or their opponents, are interested in real existence, not in an existence in model, but that's a difference. So model is a mathematical structure in which we simply stipulate that some objects exist. And in this framework, a discussion about between theists and atheists or agnostics is perfectly reasonable, because they simply discuss whether model with God is admissible or not. But what does it mean that it is admissible or not? So we have several possibilities which are not purely logical. I mean, this part of my talk shows that this debate is surrounded by several assumptions. The first possibility is that the language of God's sentences and suitable definienda, I mean formulas which define God, are specific in this sense that there are different, so the language of God's sentences is not convertible into language of science or even ordinary parlance and reverse. So we have two discourses which are mutually independent and have perhaps different semantic principles or based on different semantic principles. This is an idea of so-called negative theology. We cannot say anything positive about God, so negative theology says that we even can, it is impossible to criticize it. It is also a theological theory of so-called double truth, that is by going back to our medieval Arab philosopher Averroes, Ibn Rushd, who said that we have language of theology, language of science in our philosophy, and criticism of philosophy by theology is not admissible, and reverse. So two autonomous discourse. So God's sentences belong to a specific epistemological, ontological, or even logical order. No, second is idea of Thomas Aquinas, who for him this idea is so we have two crossing let's say science, but I mean in our sense, not medieval sense. So there is a common region and intersection. There are some truths, theological truths, which are not subjected to discursive analysis or cannot be provable by reason. We must believe in it. And there are some autonomous secular statements. But the important is that this common area, so proofs of God's existence according to Thomas, belong to this part, and of course this idea is followed by many contemporary writers, philosophers and theologians who try to combine science and religion and say, for example, that science is not incomplete and it requires to be supplemented by theology in order to give a proper picture of the world. I guess that tomorrow first lecture by Michał Heller will provide an example of such thinking. And a third possibility is very similar to first. According to this standpoint, language of God's sentences is not reducible to language of science or even ordinary speech, ordinary language. However, this is not the end of story, because this is a possibility which is preferred by many contemporary atheists, particularly so-called new atheists, like Dawson, Weinberg, Feynman or Dennett, who say that we can prove that God doesn't exist, but of course under an additional assumption. This assumption is that usually naturalistic, and it says that there exists only what is proved by empirical science. So there are no transcendental, extratemporal, supernatural beings. And it shows that this debate is surrounded by very strong philosophical assumptions. So in order to conclude, the above analysis shows that our attitude to God's sentences depends on several factors. For instance, adopting scientism as a metaphilosophical position, or that belief in science is a prejudice. This is an opposite assumption. In other words, we believe that exists only what is asserted by science, naturalism, or there is no reason that the realm of science exhausts what exists. It is supernaturalism. So this is a situation, and how to qualify it? No, the last sentence is maybe not pessimistic, but it shows, in a sense, in my opinion, a charm of philosophy, because we see that res ad principam philosophicarum venit. And this is an appeal to all people who debate this. Remember Dante's famous statement, I think, at the entrance of hell, yes, that lasciate ogni speranza, that this situation will change. So we philosophers have something to do for eternity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So now we are going to the questions. Please.
I have two questions or remarks. I don't really see how the sentence "God exists" you've written on the table can be rewritten the way you've done it. You wanted to remove God from the subject of the proposition to the predicate, but then the first sentence is fine, yeah. The second is fine, but then God is B, you put God again in the subject of a proposition, and so you commit the same mistake you wanted to avoid. So I think there is something wrong in the way you've put it. God is B, then you have God again as a subject in the proposition. Of course, it is not an existential statement, but it can be treated as such. There is something. I mean, could you explain what you mean by this? Because normally this is, if we take Russell, for instance, who would do it, he would do it completely differently, and that would be consistent. I don't see this as something consistent.
Okay, so I would like to avoid all specific assumption about proper names. So, for example, that proper A names are eliminated by definite descriptions or are explained by descriptions, or the idea of Sol Kripke, that proper names are so to speak primitive, and they denote the same reference in all possible words. So this is a controversy. So for me, the simplest way is to convert, because I see no reason which prevents from doing that, into a predicate. So if I say that, for example, Warsaw exists, yes, so I see that there is a city, Warsaw. What wrong is it? Every proper name can be converted into a predicate form, and it depends. Yes, and usually we intend Yes, that. This is a singleton. Is a, remember that references of predicates are sets, not individual objects. So this set is a singleton, at least in Christian Jewish tradition. Probably a Greek philosophers couldn't use this first form. What does it mean? God exists if we have many gods.
Well, so let me explain my question, because I agree with your premise that, oh, with your point of departure, that you want to rewrite the sentence God exists into a set of propositions, which remove God from the subject of the proposition. But in my opinion, you have not succeeded, because the third one is we have God again as a subject, isn't it?
Which?
Here? God is P. If this is, if you put treat these three, because I just couldn't.
No, you know, I think that it is a question of how to define language. If you say that proper names cannot be parts of predicates, it's okay, but it is a novel idea of first order language.
Because this perhaps I will explain then in detail in writing, so I don't want to take your time. I would have the second question. I would have more, but just a second. You mentioned that theist and atheist positions are symmetric. There has been a long debate on that. If you claim, for instance, that behind the desk there is an angel, and I say, how come? Are our positions symmetric?
In this sense that, you know, we can use the same language without worrying about existential assumptions, I should add. However, of course, it is not symmetric in the case of obligation of onus probandi to prove, because negative existentials are provable in a very specific way. We can say that there are no big round squares because there are no round square at all. So, but it's the only one way of direct proving of negative existentials from other negative existential. But finally, you must say white round squares don't exist because they are contradictory. Yes. And we apply a definition that contradictory objects don't exist. But this situation is clear. So in the case of God, it's not so clear, because the debate whether he is consistent or inconsistent, you know, I have nothing to do, nothing to say about that. I have no idea. Anyway, I take for granted that I am a believer, but I take for granted that theists or believers can write to assume at least that God is consistent. Why not? All proofs of inconsistency are also based on some strong assumptions, and finally, this is a simple excuse of believers or of theologians, that supernatural beings are not subjected to normal logical criteria of consistency, and this statement has no reply. This is the end of discussion. Res and principium venit in this case.
Okay, thank you. We go to the next question.
Well, my question really has just been answered by your last sentence in a way, but let me say what I want to say. Namely, the main problem is the reference. Does the term God have a reference or not? So, but the assumption is that everything exists in the same way. And if we deny that, then the issue becomes more complicated. So, for example, when I ask you whether the horizon exists. You know, it's clearly that it doesn't exist in the same sense as the mountain exists, yes? And so there are many ways, even in the very normal way of approaching the world of existence. And when we talk about God, perhaps this other way of existence, or as they say, you know, be beyond existence or beyond the normal way of existing can be used. And then if so, then probably we need a bit different approach, maybe a different logic, I don't know. That's one of the ways of dealing with the problem, which of course is something that you mentioned, but you said that you want to use normal logical tools. And the second remark is that if we assume that there is a reference to this term God, we can say that in order to understand what the reference is, we need really to make it, you know, the sentence, you know, really have sense at all, be meaningful, we need to refer to the whole cultural background, the all those stories that make the term God mean something specific. So it's all very strongly culturally relative, and the whole culture, in a way, is only the not there. There is a one object that can be said to be the referent of the term God, but rather the whole culture makes it clear that God makes sense, or from the other point of view, another culture may make it clear that this doesn't make sense.
No, I agree much. I will not comment the first because the question of is existence uniform term or not is a long discussion anyway. So the second, okay, so I agree, but cultural relativity cannot decide about logical analysis. It is clear. For example, when I sometimes go to church for wedding ceremony or funeral ceremony, I am listening to what people say, sing, and I wonder whether they understand or not. But I understand. But of course, they behave in a standard cultural way. It is one my experience. Second is that I discuss this problem with many priests, not rabbis, but priests. Priests say that finally that you must believe or not. If you believe, you know. If you are not believer, you don't know. But it is the end of discussion. It's because why? Why the this cultural position of being a priest is epistemically privileged? I don't know why, but I agree. Of course, there are several, you know, among Catholics, you know that everybody knows who lives in Poland knows that if we extract properties of God from political speeches of our leaders, so we can be very surprised by this idea of God. Or so a, today I read that there's a professor of sociology who is a Catholic who says that the Pope Francis should be analyzed critically. One can say it is a heresy. Yes, other did not, that Francis doesn't speak from ex cathedra, but so this is a sociological cultural question, but logicians should be neutral to such to some extent, of course.
Okay, we go to the next question, please.
Thank you. My name Ludwig Kostro. I am professor emeritus in Gdańsk University in Poland. I am a physicist, philosopher, and biblicist. I would like first to thank you for the lecture that was not only very interesting, but also very instructive and very important. I would like only say something about your proposal to replace names by descriptions.
Okay.
By descriptions, yes. When we do this, in almost every worldview, there is recognized a being that is entirely independent, entirely self-dependent, dependent on its own nature. And in the theist say that God is this independent entity, self-dependent, self-existent, self-sufficient, self-forming, autonomous, self-acting. For an atheist, if he is a materialist, the matter is the self-being, self-acting. For a naturalist, the nature has all these properties. For a pantheist, it's the divinely all-being. So we name, we in all these worldviews, we are always to do with a being that is an absolute. Because in Latin, absolute means entirely independent. So I would like to finish with some ecumenism. When we are always talking about a being that is self-existent, all, but we use different names. But when we enter in entomological, for instance, matter. Matter is connected with mother, matrix. So when we are materialists and consider the word matter in the largest possible sense, then that is in the sense of a motherhood, but metaphorically say, so then we can say that the self-existent is a matter. The nature is also etymologically nascor natus sum, nature. So we are dealing always, we are speaking always about the same being, but we use different names.
I am not sure anyway, but it is a topic for a longer discussion. So this is a standpoint. Maybe some physicists share your view, but certainly other not.
So I see two more questions. Yeah, and then I have to stop. Short question, because it does.
My name's Colin James. I have one question. Is the credo complete because it leaves out a proper name, namely that of the Holy Trinity definition, one God in three persons in one God. My more important question is, on the whiteboard, can you please insert any modal operators so I can make sense of that?
Modal operators?
Yeah, modal operators, like possibility and necessity.
Thank you.
Okay, so, you know, my my view I can is that the only legitimate modal the only legitimate modal concepts are logical modalities, because there are absolute in this sense that something is true in all models or possible ways, like Sol Kripke would say, I don't know whether yes or not, or something is in a possible world. So-called physical, theological, and natural possibilities or necessities are related to laws of nature. We can assume that such laws exist, but there is a problem which statistical or not, this is so-called nomological necessity. And this is a substructure of the structure of all possible worlds. What about God's necessity? I don't know. It must be analyzed. So anyway, take for example the inference that it is impossible that only contingent being exists. It is one of ways of proving third way of Thomas. But it is false. I can describe a consistent model in which everything is contingent. There's no contradiction. But of course it depends on many assumptions. So it is my answer. So I know what does it mean that logical theorem of first order logic, to be more precise, is necessary because it is true in all worlds. There are some assumptions still, for example, existential. But anyway, this is my answer. So to put a possibility of necessity here requires something more, namely of deciding whether we have S4, S5, or something between, like yesterday was argued, supplemented S4 by an instance of S5 axioms, but more, that is my personal view. Modal logic is not in the same sense logic as first order logic. The reason is, or Sol Kripke is here, so because this accessibility relations is defined by extra logical conditions. Symmetry or reflexivity is not a purely logical condition. So it is a formal theory which is similar to logic, but certainly we have a problem which, for example, modal systems define logical modalities. So people say, that, well, K or S5 and so on, but this controversy shows that nobody, you know, worries about necessity of first order logic because it can be reduced to model theory. See.
Okay, we have time for last question.
Thank you. I'm completely external to this debate. Do notice that you discuss something which for no doubt for certain participants has an emotional load. And therefore I wonder to what extent logical arguments will have a possibility to pass. And I have a simple suggestion. Let's drop the word God and talk about Vishnu. Vishnu is, for Indians, a god, or sometimes the supreme god, but at least it's a term that for most participants in this conference is emotionally not loaded, so that perhaps the logical aspect of the discussion will get more independent attention. That's my suggestion. No longer God, Vishnu from now onward. Thank you.
Good.
Okay, so thank you again for the talk.